I'd like to call this council in this, what is this, regular?
Regular
council committee, regular council meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the invocation, would you all please rise?
We meet to serve our community and endeavor to be worthy custodians of all that has been entrusted to us. Let us be concerned only for what will promote good government. May we bring to our council chamber minds that think and hearts that feel, so that in our deliberations we may display imagination, wisdom, and courage, and the will to do our work for the good of all.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
Your Worship, all members of council are present.
Thank you. There is no addendum this evening, just some very brief. The Remembrance Day ceremony started yesterday at Mather Arch and Stevensville. They continue with the ceremonies on Wednesday, November the 11th. There'll be one at the Fort Erie branch of the Legion at their small cenotaph on their property. There will also be one in Ridgeway at the cenotaph at the top of the hill in the cemetery, the corner of Ridgeway Road and Far Avenue. Both of those ceremonies are scheduled for 11 o'clock. There is upcoming a Chamber of Commerce 10th Annual Black Cat Gala. That's at the Leisureplex starting at 5:30 p.m. on Friday, November the 13th. And those interested in tickets can still contact Chamber of Commerce. And then finally, I wish to recognize a contribution made, a donation made to the municipality by Enbridge Gas. Through our policies, we are required to acknowledge donations that we receive in excess of $5,000, and a donation has been received from Enbridge for its Safe Community Program in the amount of $7,500 to aid with the purchase of training props for the Town of Fort Erie Fire Department. And the town would like to thank Enbridge for that donation, and we are grateful to receive that. Madam Clerk, is there a need for a resolution with respect to this?
I don't believe, Your Worship, that's part of the policy, just simply the announcement.
Thank you. That then takes us to disclosures of pecuniary interest. There being none, a couple of public notices, the continuing schedule for our 2016 budget meetings. Next meeting is Wednesday, December the 9th, with respect to water and wastewater. The meeting after that on Wednesday, January the 13th, 2016, will be with respect to the library and the EDTC budgets. The fourth meeting will be Wednesday, January the 27th, 2016, and that relates to the general levy. If there's a further meeting required, it will be held February the 3rd, 2016. All the meetings are at 5:30 p.m., and they're all held in the Town Hall Council chambers. And there's also the notice of the adoption of the 2016 preliminary capital budget, and notice is that Council intends to adopt the 2016 preliminary capital budget bylaw at its meeting of Monday, November the 23rd, 2015. Any person wishing to appear as a delegation must register with the Clerk's Office by 3 p.m. on Thursday, November the 19th, 2015. That takes us then to the Regional Councilor report. Good evening, Councilor Annunziata.
Good evening, Your Worship. Good evening, members of council. Good evening, members in the audience. Same format. I'll discuss what we're doing at the region specifically, and if there's any questions, by all means, have at it. So first announcement, the new public health center, that will be opening up November 16th. And again, the new address is 1264 Garrison Road. So it moves from the Hagee Street location to Garrison Road, a much more centralized location, with much better amenities as well. Telephone, fax, and email all will remain the same. The only difference is the address. As you know, Council is going through its budget right now for 2016. Some good news stories. Obviously, we gave a guidance of 0%, not only for Council, but all our ABCs, our boards and committees as well. You'll be happy to know that garbage and waste have come in at minus 1.45%. That's a decrease. and it does not compromise service one bit. As a matter of fact, in the capital budget, we do have $500,000 worth of scheduled improvements at the Bridge Street drop-off location in 2016, with another $318,000 in 2017-2019. So some good improvements going on at the Bridge Street location, and a reduction on the levy with respect to garbage and waste requisitioning. With respect to water and wastewater, again, we've come in with a minus 0.24% without compromising services. As a matter of fact, Fort Erie will be the recipient of $16.4 million in water and wastewater infrastructure improvements, with another $8.5 million in 2017, all that with a reduction of 0.24% on the water and wastewater. With the capital budget, 0%, with a $10 million investment in GO Transit this year, with another $30 million in GO Transit investment in 2017. With respect to operations, 0%, court services, 0%, Niagara Regional Police Services, 0%, which is a good news story considering that year after year you had about a 4% increase. So 0% for Niagara Regional Police Services as well. MPCA, 0%, and Niagara Regional Housing, unfortunately, they came in with a 2.5% budget, but they have been referred back to the Housing Board to come in and respect the guidance set by Council at 0%. We'll be waiting to see what efficiencies they can come up with. So overall, very grateful that our boards and committees were respectful of guidance, and we didn't compromise services, and we actually found efficiencies. Central Avenue Bridge. So, as you know, we were having some issues with respect to some of the signage. We put in additional barrels to identify the road closures. We increased the police presence. We tried to do some education through advertisements in local newspapers. Unfortunately, those mitigation methods are probably effective for those people choosing to follow the rules, but unfortunately, we're dealing with people that don't necessarily want to follow the rules. So the course of action is to close Wintermute Street on either side of Central Avenue. Again, communicating with staff, I understand that transit uses Wintermute Street, so a strategy has to come in place with respect to detours. And as well, our emergency services still need to respond. Speaking to our chief, he has no objections to it, so I think the best course of action, and I'm sure Councillor McDermott would agree, is just to close off that street entirely and hopefully avoid those potentials of two cars meeting at the top of that bridge. That's pretty much it. I did receive one call from a concerned citizen concerning Queen Street and just the pedestrian-friendly nature of that that whole intersection at Central Avenue and Queen Street, understanding that this might have to be a joint effort between the region and the town. I'm going to leave it with staff as far as what we can do to make that intersection a little bit more pedestrian-friendly for people walking over that that Central Avenue overpass and certainly utilizing Queen Street. So I'll leave that with staff. I'll open up to questions or comments from council.
Is there not a crosswalk at any of the lights on the Central Avenue overpass?
As far as I know, that's possibly the issue.
I would think that would be the solution, and perhaps we can take that up at Public Works at the region.
Yeah, I'll be more than happy to bring that forward, but maybe getting comments from town staff just to see what landscape elements we can actually implement on that stretch.
Okay, Councillor Nutt, did you have your hand up?
Thank you, Your Worship. Through yourself to Councillor Nunziata. First, I'd like to thank the region for all their efforts in coming in below budget and at the 0% increases. I have actually two questions for you. The first one being that if we close the upper half of Wintermute Street for the bridge going up and down, how's that going to impact Barbican? Are we going to close it south of there, or what would be, I guess, east of their entrance to their business, or?
All fantastic questions.
Well, there's access to Barbican from either off the central through the
Yeah.
Yeah.
And part of our staff, Kelly, you know, made some great comments, specifically if the police had an opportunity to enforce that kind of behavior. I don't think they have yet, but I think in order just to mitigate that risk entirely, I think we take the most drastic approach, which is to put concrete barriers up and close those roads down. It's very clear that vehicular traffic do not want to follow those the signage that have been posted. And unfortunately, it's a situation where we have to deal with not the people that want to follow the rules, but the people that are choosing not to.
Councillor Nutt?
Thank you. Yes. The last question. I know that 2.5% increase on regional housing, they had come in on their budget with the extremely long wait times for affordable housing mm-hmm. in Fort Erie. How are we going to combat that with the zero budget increase, especially with the hydro rates going up as of November 1st?
Well, I think the whole idea and the whole direction from staff when it came to a 0% budget and expecting its ABCs to follow suit, it wasn't necessarily an opportunity to create hardship. It was a good exercise to go through. And when you exert that kind of pressure from the top down to challenge an organization to find efficiencies, I think that's what they're going to go about doing it. I don't necessarily think you have to cut services. I don't necessarily think you have to compromise the service levels. But I do think there's an opportunity to come in at zero. By their own financial statements, there's roughly about $12 million sitting in reserves, and plus a $250,000 surplus that they came in this year that did not go towards respecting 0% guidance set by council. So there's opportunities there, and again, it's not the the will of council to be heavy-handed. The Niagara Regional Housing Board has their own board, and they're going to make their own decisions, and hopefully they come in with a more reasonable budget that council can deliberate and certainly sign off on.
Anyone else? Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Councillor Nunziata, just to go on the your comments on GO Transit, I'm not quite sure how far they've come down at Queen's Park as far as when GO Transit will be here, but just putting money aside for the budget, is there anything in there that the region is considering? Because from my understanding, it's going to be coming to St. Catharines in the beginning. And are they setting up some kind of carpooling parking lots for Fort Erie area?
Well, I appreciate the question. But again, if council recalls, GO Transit is part of the region's strategic plan. And we've been working very, very diligently with our provincial counterparts in order to accommodate that goal. So the first $10 million has been set aside, and that will kickstart the process, so to speak. With respect to your comments as far as you know, the execution of the plan and the end results as far as carpooling and those kind of elements, I think that's a little further down. I think the goal right now is to get a firm commitment from the province as far as the timeline goes, and that's going to come from obviously the province and then Metrolinx, and once we get those firm commitments, then we can start the planning process.
Anything further, Councillor Lubberts? Anyone else? Then we'll move on. Thank you very much, Councillor Nunziata. Then we'll move on to presentations and delegations. And this evening we have the Chair and the CEO of the Niagara Regional Housing, coincidentally, Shirley Cordner, former Councillor, good evening, and Ellen Balmain. Good evening.
Thank you, Mayor Redekop and Councillors. It feels good. It's been a while. I am the Chair of the Board for Niagara Regional Housing. And we'll get some slides up here. So in 2002, Regional Council approved Niagara Regional Housing as the administrator to administrate not-for-profit housing programs for rent geared to income, manage publicly owned housing, local housing corporations, assess and make recommendations on the supply and demand for low-income housing. The mission of NRH is to expand opportunities that make affordable housing an integral part of building healthy and sustainable communities in Niagara. NRH is dedicated to these key directions, empowering households, connecting the service delivery network, moving towards sustainable, affordable housing. Our key services are administration of the Access Center in the centralized waiting list for subsidized housing in Niagara, management and operation of 2,758 public housing units, legislative oversight of 66 social housing providers, and 3,983 cooperative and nonprofit units, administration of social housing programs, coordination of the development of new affordable housing. Our board of directors is governed by a 14-member board that includes housing sector stakeholders. And from Fort Erie here, we have Kelly Kendrick, who is with Ganawaga Homes, four from the community, and five from Niagara Regional Councillors. So Ellen, our CAO, I skipped ahead of her a little bit. She's going to break it down a little bit more on the key services, and then at the end we'll be ready for questions from the council.
So as you mentioned about the wait list, as of September 30th, we had over 4,700 families or households on the wait list. The wait list for Fort Erie, as you can see, is 719 families, and I've got my back here too, sorry. And of the 715, 406, as you can see, are non-senior. So we have a large wait list for senior in general, but it's more balanced in Fort Erie, interestingly. You have a good number of family homes. So the Fort Erie averages, one of the things we're doing as we're going to the communities is we're looking at what the average monthly income for communities are compared to what the affordable rent or the RGI rent would be. So we use the SAFCAN National Housing Survey profile with an average after-tax income in 2010 of individuals 15 years and over in Fort Erie was $2,496 a month. And as you can see here, we use the private rents from CMHC's 2014 market rent report. So the market rents we have here for a one-bedroom, 673, two-bedroom, 843, and a three-bedroom. There are no affordable housing components in Fort Erie. That's the new model of funding that's come out since devolution, where rents are kept at 80% of market rent versus a percentage of household. The rent geared to income is based on 30%. Rent is calculated 30% of the household's total income. So everyone who's earning declares and rent is calculated. So we've taken the average of all of the one bedrooms in Fort Erie. And so the average paid is $352 for a two bedroom, $305, and $394 for a three bedroom. And that's from the rent rolls from our housing. So in Fort Erie, our public housing component includes townhouses and attached homes. And you can see the breakdown there. The largest number we have is three-bedroom. And for seniors, we have one building with 40 one-bedroom units. It's one of the traditional former ministry. For adults, so that's under 55 with no dependents. We have two buildings, 14 bachelor units and 8 one-bedroom units, for a total of 116 public housing units. So we also have cooperative and not-for-profit rent supplement programs operating in Fort Erie. And you can see here that we have a total of 108 families, 56 senior and 130 adults. So the total is 294 social housing. So in addition to the public housing component of 116, we have that number. So the social housing programs, the other component of what Niagara Regional Housing does is we are responsible for delivering the housing programs, that a variety of them that have were downloaded, including rent supplement, oversight of the social housing providers, and delivery of public housing, but also housing allowance, Housing First, Ontario Renovates, which is a program that helps to keep people in their home as long as possible. The rent supplement program, of which we have a total of 988 different rent supplement units across the region, where we work with private landlords and supplement that difference between the RGI calculation for people and the actual market rent, and that's how the subsidy is calculated. And then Welcome Home Niagara. Welcome Home Niagara is a really popular program that's come out, again, 100% funded by the province and the federal government. And it offers down payment assistance to families who are looking to enter into the ownership ladder for the first time. So they need it. They can manage. They have to get their first mortgage, but they can't seem to get ahead and collect and save for the down payment. That's where they're getting tripped up all the time. So they're able to apply, and we help them get into their first home. It's a 20-year forgivable loan if they remain in the home. If they sell the home, there's processes for selling and dividends, and where are the second mortgage listed on the property. So the Housing and Homelessness Plan is a 10-year plan, part of the Housing Services Act that came down in 2012, that all service areas had to develop a 10-year plan to look at the whole system of housing and the challenges being faced. So this plan was developed in partnership with the Community Services Division of the region and NRH and other community partners, and is being rolled out now with participation from lots of community groups and stakeholders. The four key priorities for the plan are to improve options to house people who don't have a home, to expand supports to help people find and retain their homes, and increase opportunities and options across the continuum, and improve the effectiveness of the overall housing system. So it's pretty lofty, and we would wonder if we were able to achieve all that. Without a 10-year plan, we wouldn't have 4,700 families on the wait list. So we have lots of challenges that are barriers to successfully helping people get their housing or retain it, including mental health and addiction problems, hoarding behaviors, bed bugs, our aging facilities that aren't always, because so many of them were built in the 60s and 70s, accessibility is a problem, right? So as our population ages and is able to live independently but with greater mobility challenges because of technology, getting people in and out of units can still be a challenge even if we have them there. So we're certainly not able to, with old facilities, help everybody to the maximum, but we're working on that with modifications and where we can. So how can we address the various challenges that we're dealing with? Well, we're constantly looking at how we can work in partnerships and collaborations with other providers. We work very closely, especially with tenants who are facing significant challenges. We have a unit of community program coordinators, essentially outreach workers, that are working with the most complex challenges we have and are working to help people resolve, match them with the appropriate resources in the community, and do everything we can to avoid eviction. We operate programs and give funding support to programs for that are run for children's groups on site on properties. We do a lot of referrals, as I said. We're looking at innovative financing options. So how can we leverage property that the mortgage is paid off to look at how we might be able to use that to support renovations and other projects? And those are all the things that we're actively addressing. So innovations, of course, the investment in affordable housing extension, which is a 6-year extension, we're in year 2 from the provincial and federal government, it was wonderful news. That's where we're able to fund the programs like housing allowance, which supports people while they're on the wait list, how we're able to add more rent subs, which I think we're about 388 new rent subs since this funding came into place, how we can do the home ownership and the Ontario Renovates program. They're all 100% funded by the IAH program. We have innovations like our building at Fitch that opened in 2014. You know, we've received the silver LEED status. We're very proud of that. It's very energy efficient, leading technology in both there and Broad Oak. And of course, Housing First, where we're wrapping around people with really significant high needs who need to stop the cycle of cycling in and out of homelessness and not use the medical system as a way in and out or the police system. So it's an intensive support program, and we're really working with our partners through community services and other agencies to make that successful. So in total with the IAH funding, there has been $11,700,000 that's been made available to develop units across the service area. So just over $3 million has been awarded to three providers who are looking at expansions and had basically shovel-ready projects ready to go. That's been a great thing, and I think we're going to have 47 units in total out of that group. And the rest has been earmarked through proposals to council for NRH to look at developing. So we'll have just over $8 million to work with, and we're currently right now investigating opportunities.
Excuse me, Ms. Bellman, how much longer do you anticipate you'll be?
Well, that was my last presentation slide. I just have a 3-minute video.
Okay, well, how about if Councilor Passero moved that we extend this for another 5 minutes, seconded by Councilor Lubertz. All those in favor? That's carried. Thank you.
Niagara Regional Housing is excited to announce their first new design-build construction to enhance the lives of seniors in Welland. With provincial and federal funding available, NRH's Board of Directors responded with a plan to address affordable housing needs on an existing owned site in Niagara. This land was already zoned for seniors and housed 29 senior households at 235 Fitz Street. Together with regional partners, volunteers, tenants, neighbors, and a local architect, NRH put together a plan for a 67-unit building that would link to the existing Fitch building. The new Fitch building, called Fitch East, is a testament to the progress that has been made in building design since the first Fitch was built in 1982.
It's wonderful to see how Niagara Regional Housing has taken into consideration universal design and the FABS document in creating accessible units for our local communities.
Fitch East is universally accessible.
For example, the rolling showers, higher sinks, mirrors, the lower sinks, actually looking in the kitchen with the pull-out countertop, the ability for rolling up to the sinks, using the stove, or accessing the refrigerator.
It includes 3 fully accessible ground floor, 1-bedroom apartments. The building is highly energy efficient. It will exceed the current building code requirements for energy savings by at least 40%, mostly ground source heating and cooling by geothermal. It will be financially self-sufficient through a mixture of rent geared to income, affordable and market rents. Fitch East will support itself with no ongoing impact to the tax base or taxpayer. NRH is also proud that this new building will be LEED certified. LEED certification means the building has achieved leadership in energy and environmental design, and that careful thought has been given to the carbon footprint this project will have on the environment. Fitch East is a shining example of smart growth principles. It is an infill project that uses an existing community to accommodate more tenants. It is Niagara Regional Housing's first entirely smoke-free community.
There is a clear demand for smoke-free housing in our community. So in addition to the health benefits, 100% smoke-free multi-unit dwellings are practical in that they decrease fire hazards and they also reduce unit cleaning costs. So unit cleaning costs can include painting and other smoking-related damages and maintenance costs.
Fitch East is designed to be walkable to further encourage better well-being through outdoor activity and community interaction.
Public Health congratulates Niagara Regional Housing and recognizes them as a leader in Niagara.
Fitch East reflects the new senior lifestyle. It's modern, environmentally conscious, and encourages good health. It promises to be a welcoming and warm place for seniors to call home.
That, thank you for extending that and seeing that that's the end of our presentation.
Thank you for the presentation. Do any members of council have any questions of either Ms. Balmain or Ms. Cordner? Councillor McDermott.
Yes, thank you for your presentation. I see we have waiting list of 4705 right now and a 10-year plan. And of course, we're going to have this list is going to continue to grow over the next 10 years. Where do you see this going? Because, I mean, we have an aged community, not only here, I mean, especially here, but throughout Niagara. So this is going to grow as we go along. So what is it that, you know, government can do to, you know, mitigate that?
That's a very good question, and I think that's what the best minds in the province and the federal government are looking at now. We're hoping that the federal government, the new federal government, has certainly promised to revisit and address housing. So we're interested to see what new initiatives might come out now as they work with the provincial partners and municipal feedback. We're currently in a process where they're rethinking the Ontario long-term housing strategy. So feedback was provided over the course of the past number of months, and they're looking at implementing changes, which helps to guide the future that will come our way. So we do have aging infrastructure like municipalities are facing. We have older buildings that were downloaded, and they were old when they were downloaded. We have wartime homes that were built in the late 40s and 50s, a cluster of them in Niagara Falls. There's 70 of them. So we're looking at pilot projects to try and sell some off without displacing people as people leave. And that's a baby step. My idea would be that we would want to sell all those properties and look at building newer, high efficiency, multiple bedroom units, maybe row housing that we could accommodate families in, because it's very expensive on large lots with small homes, 2 and 3 bedroom homes. There's lots of ways to re-look at how we reinvest the stock and use the money if we sell properties to build better. And then to look at, you know, are people on Ontario Works, who, if we believe we're doing the proper eligibility testing, are they receiving enough of a benefit? That's one of the questions that's about poverty, right? Because the wait list is about poverty. It's about people who have met all of our eligibility criteria and still can't and must be paying. If they're not already in housing, then they're on our list, then they're paying rent that they can't afford somewhere. So it's a very complex problem, and we're working with our partners, as I said, with community services to look at how to be more creative about that and look at our partners across or our peers across the province and internationally at what are they doing. I was at a seniors housing summit last week in Toronto, and there was people from the Netherlands and the UK, and they're doing some very innovative things to help people live longer in age in place. It's cheaper to do that than long-term care or hospitalization. So if we can invest more in that kind of housing and keep people safe, we reduce the burden on other elements of the system, right?
Councilor McDermott, yes.
So over the past, let's just say the last 5 years, how much, what would the average be that this list grows in Niagara?
Well, that's a very good question, and I don't know exactly how it's grown. It's a project we're working on. We just pulled out, we do a program where we track the market rent people, because some of the co-ops that, like here, for example, have units, 25% of the units are for market rent. So we were rolling in that list, and we pulled it out. Otherwise, today I would have been telling you there was 5,800 households. So we're looking at all the different ways we can really number crunch and analyze it. And one of the things we're trying to look at is, where are people living when they make the application? And when they get housed 5 years later, 6 years later, it's not always where they are, but where did they start? So for example, Fort Erie is blessed with some family homes, and other communities that I've been presenting in so far don't have family homes. They just have the seniors homes. So they're wondering, well, where are all the homeless families that have applied? Well, they've moved somewhere else, right? Well, they're waiting on the list. And if we build it, will they come, right? Those are some of the questions. So we're really trying to analyze all of that data to figure out where we can best strategize and invest in programming or structurally or whatever for the future. So hopefully if I came back next year, I'd have much better answers for you, because I would have had a chance to do that work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor McDermott. Any other councillors? Ms. Bellman, so in terms of the waiting list across Niagara and the actual waiting list in Fort Erie, it's about 15% of the waiting list, it looks like, is from Fort Erie, which has about 7% of the population of Niagara. Are there any strategies specific to Fort Erie that regional housing is working on currently?
Not specifically. We do have One of the things about the homes in Niagara, and I know that the region and yourselves are looking at transportation and the issues. We do have people, when they sign up, they can pick all the different, put their name on all the different lists for family housing, for example. And, but if they don't have transportation, when their name comes up in 5 years, and they maybe have a small job, or they maybe are close to family that are supporting them with childcare, do they want to move to Niagara, to Fort Erie, where they don't have transportation and an easy way to get in and out of other parts where they might have jobs? That's something that comes up all the time, and we often have to offer the openings in Fort Erie more than once before someone will take it. So that's telling as a trend, and it fits in with the transportation plans, that people want to live here, but then if they're from somewhere else, they're feeling isolated without personal transportation. So that is definitely information we're feeding up through the Housing and Homelessness Group to talk about how do we deal with that. What's the message there?
I'm thinking more in terms of if 16% of your waiting list is from Fort Erie, why wouldn't there be some strategies to construct housing or find? I understand money. Obviously,
right.
Money is a challenge.
But households... the households can pick more than one place. So, well, if you just look, if you were to add up the wait list for every community, it wouldn't add up to 4,702 because they could pick the five communities with family homes. So they will be listed on their wait list component multiple times. So that's why I'm trying to get a handle on where are people applying from, and we only count them once in one way, like to read the data another way, because the more places they put their name on, the more opportunity they're going to have that their name will come up, right? Like if you play the lottery, more tickets you buy, the more chances to win, as it were. And so that is, we know specifically individual households, we have 4,700. But we know that they pick multiple places.
I see. And in terms of your operating budget, what percentage of that would come from the province?
What percentage? Well, I know that the I can't remember specifically. I should have that in front of me. I have the slide. We have 51% is from the region of Niagara, and then between the province and the federal government and rents that we collect, it makes up the balance of the funding.
Is it fair to say that both the federal government and the provincial government need to step up if this is an issue that's going to be adequately dealt with?
Yes, I would say so, because since, and this is something I tried to talk about when I did my budget presentation, since devolution, the federal subsidy has been decreasing. That was planned all along, and we knew that. And at the same time, there was an expectation for the municipalities to pick that up, because the legislation says that the service areas will provide adequate and affordable housing and keep the public housing numbers the same as it was before. You can tear down 10 units and build 10 more, but you have a service level standard. And so every year there's an expected increase in the funding level and a decrease from the feds. And that's been happening all along. It's very confusing, but we're 15 years into it. And that's because their operating agreements are expiring with the providers they built for. So, yes, they do need to come up with a different strategy that is going to be more permanent funding. We did get a one-time bump of funding, as I explained last week, and that's for 2016. So I think it was 138,000 maybe. And that's for 1 year. There's no promise of the multiple years of extending or addressing the fact that end of operating agreements are happening. So our budget included, for example, 34 units that are expiring at one of those providers. So there's 34 RGI units in a not-for-profit, and that not-for-profit's mortgage is up in June. The agreement with the federal government when it was built. They have no obligation to continue that. So we built in money to our budget to say we will do rent supplements with them so we can keep those people in those rent geared to income units and continue their subsidy. But it won't be in the old way. It will be in a new way with an agreement with the provider to provide those same levels differently. So that costs money to do that.
And that would, by definition, come out of the taxpayers' pockets if the provincial or federal governments are not covering it.
That's correct. And so that's an increase that, you know, we can choose not to do, but I don't think that's the way we want to go, because that's just adding more people to the, it's exacerbating the problem we currently are experiencing.
Thank you very much. Any other counselors? Thank you very much, Ms. Balmain and Ms. Cordner, for coming out. There are no other delegations, so that takes us to the consent agenda. And Councillor McDermott, I understand you have a resolution regarding consent agenda items.
Yes, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Butler. The Council approves the consent agenda as recommended.
Are there any questions with respect to any of the matters in the consent agenda? Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. On the Community Gaming Development Corporation minutes.
Yeah.
Item 7 in that minute, I think page 2, item 7. Our director there, Mr. Wilson, he said that there was a check presented to, I guess, the town of Fort Erie for, and it represented the $1 million mark that the town had received from, since eBingo started back in January 2014. And I'm just wondering, does the town have a policy on how we report where we spend this money or where this money is allocated?
I think that was money that went to the charities. So, Mr. Jansen, do you want to answer that, or I see Councillor McDermott?
To Your Worship, to the Councillor, the $1 million is not money received by the Community Gaming, just to be clear. That's how much it's generated in eBingo. We get a portion of that. I believe it's somewhere in the approximately 2-3%, but I think Councillor McDermott may have more to add. I saw his hand up.
Right. So we get a licensing fee with respect to these, but this is all money that would have gone to the nonprofit organizations that have bingo licenses, and this is just a way for the government to show how successful it is. Councillor McDermott, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, Your Worship, that this was more for publicity. To state that over, since e-gaming's taken over here, that $1 million has been raised.
Right, and I should point out that there's also another bingo hall that also would have received allocations to the nonprofit groups that conduct bingo events at that hall. I don't know what the status of that is, but we didn't get the money and I didn't spend that $1 million. Yes. Yeah, Councillor Nutt, do you have something you can add?
Yes, I'm on the gaming committee. So what happened was the other bingo hall in town, there was a delay in them moving to eBingo. So in the last gaming meeting, just due to the influx of the dollar and the number of Americans coming over now because of the parities moved away and the Canadian dollar's less, there have been some adjustments made to the amounts the charities have been receiving in the upward motion because the eBingo has seen a faster return to what the previous bingo was. When it was implemented, there was a drop-off in the amount of revenue generated by the charities, but that's come back up now and actually is a little bit ahead of last year. So the allocations are moving back towards what they originally were for all the charities.
Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much. So what is the percentage that the town receives out of this?
Mr. Jansen.
Through the chair to Councillor Lubberts. I believe the fees and charges have set it out at 3% of the net winnings. This did change in recent years, so I'm not exactly sure how it's processed, though.
Well, that's information that we'll provide to councillors, Councillor Lubitz.
Yes.
It would be tantamount to what we used to receive in terms of the issuing the licenses.
Yes, so still the question still remains, the percentage that the town of Fort Erie receives from these bingos, do we have a policy on how we report where that money is being spent or allocated?
I'm sure we do, Mr. Jansen.
To the councillor, I believe the gaming corporation and the committee actually is the one that handles and processes all the requests and allocates the funding annually. I'm not sure if anyone else can provide more context.
That's the money that goes to the charities, but I think Councillor Lubberts is questioning what happens with the money that the municipality receives in terms of the sure. licensing.
Sure. Yeah, that is included in our general levy budget. The amount that we've included over the last couple of years has certainly come down as the program has changed, but that amount is a part of our general levy. It's a non-tax revenue that goes towards general town operations.
Councilor Luberts?
Yes, thank you very much. I went through, that's our general levy budget, and it's specifically marked as bingo app monies that come. Okay, all right, thank you.
Any other councillors? Councillor Nutt and then Councillor Passero.
Just as a point of order, it's not just e-bingo licensing. There's also the pull tickets. So it's not just that this is all generated from, it's gaming licensing. So it also includes the pull tab tickets, just for clarification.
Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor Martin. I know there was some money brought, but most of that was given to the Master of Ceremonies appearance fee.
Gee, you know, if I were closer.
What did I say? Mayor Martin?
Yes.
Mayor Redica.
Yes.
I hope that's not an omen that this meeting's going till midnight.
No, but it sounds like it's gone much longer than you expected to be.
Probably, yes. Mayor Redica, my apologies. I just wanted to speak, if we were done on the gaming issue, to item D under committee minutes, accessibility advisory.
Yes.
Just to dovetail that with your comments regarding the Remembrance Day ceremonies, I just wanted to note that there is a mention in there of some work, because we got our committee minutes kind of 1 month after, that the Accessibility Advisory Committee had been working with the Niagara Parks Commission to improve accessibility towards the monument at Mather's Arch, which if you were able to attend, you would have seen those improvements. So there is a formal letter going on behalf of the AAC to the Niagara Parks Commission, thanking them not only for facilitating those improvements, but for including the AAC in their design along the process. So that formal letter will actually be included in next month's AAC committee minutes, but I wanted to recognize that now just given the timing.
Yeah, that's an excellent point because it was clearly evident it was very well done. Councillor McDermott and I had an opportunity to utilize it. It fits in very well with the structure at Mather Arch, and so I know that there were some individuals who were utilized that in order to get to the monument and to by Mather Arch. So quite correct, Councillor Passero. Anything else with respect to the items in the agenda? I had a question, and I'm not sure, maybe Councillor Nutt, you can ask this. It's in reference to the Gaming Development Corporation minutes. In terms of the increasing revenue, and I see the reallocated budgets to existing license holders to try to get them back to where they were when these initial budgets. If the increases continue, has there been any discussion or consideration given to whether new licenses might be issued?
Yes, Your Worship. In our last meeting, we did discuss that. There were expressions of interest sent out to 5 additional community groups in Fort Erie that do not currently have licensing, but to date, we have not received back any response to that expression of interest.
Well, that's good to know.
If we don't, we will continue to increase the budgets to make sure that the funds do reach those who need it.
Thank you. If there are no other questions with respect to the consent agenda items, then I will call the question on Councillor McDermott's resolution. All those in favor of approving consent agenda? None opposed. That is carried. Councillor, so then that takes us to responses to inquiries. We don't have any this evening, but it does take us then to new business and inquiries. And we'll deal with the first item under new business, and that's a resolution by you, Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redicott.
Well done.
Moved by myself and seconded by Councillor McDermott, that Council appoints Nancy Nisnik to the Ridgeway Business Improvement Area Board of Management for the period ending November 30th, 2018.
Any questions or comments? All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried. Are there any inquiries, or let's deal with inquiries first and then we'll go to any new business. Any inquiries? If there aren't any inquiries, are there any items of new business? Then Councillor Butler, we will move to motions.
Thank you, Your Worship. At this time, I'm going to withdraw the motion. After speaking with the CAO, it was agreed that it would be best to bring this up during budget deliberations.
Great. Thank you very much. So then that takes us to notices of motion. Does anyone have any notice of motion they wish to give this evening? There being none, that takes us to consideration of bylaws. And Councillor Passero, you have the resolution for first and second reading.
Thank you, Mayor Redekop.
Well done. You're learning.
Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that the bylaw package containing 134-2015 to exempt a certain lot and part of a block in registered plan 59M-319 from part lot control pursuant to Section 50 of the Planning Act 1990, Bartle Avenue, 141-9690, Ontario, Inc., Ward Campbell, 135-2015 to authorize the execution of an amending subdivision agreement with 800547 Ontario Limited, Edlin Sishin, Village Creek Estates Phase 2, Stage 2, and 136-2015 to assume primary services in the Village Creek Estates Subdivision Phase 2, Stage 1, Plan 59M-390, 800547 Ontario Limited, Edlin Sishin, is given first and second reading.
All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried. Those bylaws are on the floor for questions or comments. Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Just before we go too far with these, I just want to point out so that the clerk sees the error in the first bylaw. At the end of it, under memorandum, it shows 134-14. Should that be 15?
Do that again.
Consideration of bylaws, Bartle Avenue.
Yeah.
Right, 134-2015.
Right.
And then under there, it's got 134-14. Should that be 15?
It should be 15, and that's an error in the agenda, but the bylaw itself refers to 134-2015, as does the resolution presented by Councillor Passero. So, Madam Clerk, you may want to correct the agenda. The resolutions and the bylaw themselves have the correct dates.
Certainly, Your Worship.
Thank you, Councillor Luberts. Anything further? Any other questions or comments on the bylaw package? There being none, then we'll move to third and final reading. That will be Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that bylaws 134-2015, 135-2015, and 136-2015 are given third and final reading to be signed by the Mayor, the Clerk, under the corporate seal.
Are there any questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. That takes us to bylaw to confirm the actions of council. Councillor Zanko, you have first and second reading.
Thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Nutt, that bylaw number 137-2015 to confirm the actions of council at its meetings held on November 9th, 2015, be given third and second reading.
All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried. Councillor McDermott, you have the next resolution.
Yes, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Butler, that bylaw number 137-2015 is given third and final reading to be signed by the Mayor and Clerk under the corporate seal.
Are there any questions or comments? Councillor Luberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Just to, before we end this, it's obviously an evening of misreadings and mistakes. My motion on the resolution number 2 for the appointment of Nancy Nisnik was seconded by Councillor Butler.
And?
My error.
Who did you read?
Councillor McDermott.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention. So
could we correct that, please?
Yes, that will be corrected.
Thank you.
And thank you for bringing that up before we had to deal with it next week. Okay, are there any other questions or comments or anything else that we need to correct out of this evening's proceedings? If none, then I'll call the question on Councillor McDermott's resolution, third and final reading. All those in favor? Unopposed, that is carried. Scheduling of meetings. Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor Redekamp. We have a Museum and Cultural Heritage Committee meeting tomorrow at 10 a.m., Committee Room 1, and later on in the day at 5:30 p.m., 4-year Active Transportation Committee, also in Committee Room Number 1. And another reminder, this is our last televised meeting before the Santa Claus Parade, less than 2 weeks away, Saturday, November 21st, starting at noon. Thank you.
Thank you. You know this is going to take you a while to live down. Any other meetings? Then, Councillor Nutt, would you please do the honors?
Certainly, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zenko, that the Council adjourns at 6:58 p.m. to reconvene in a regular meeting of Council on Monday, November 23rd, 2015 at 6 p.m.
All those in favor? Opposed, that is carried. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.